Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking with someone who was a practicing cardiologist when his vision began to fail.
Dr. Joe Fontenot actually went on to continue practicing cardiology for 15 years after that, but eventually took what he learned about living with low vision and is now the medical director of Community Services for Vision Rehabilitation in Mobile, Alabama, which he founded. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Joe Fontenot.
I would like to tell people that if they are in the process or think that they are in the process of developing any sort of vision loss from conditions such as macular degeneration, diabetic disease, or glaucoma, that they should begin early on the process of looking for low vision help, low vision services that will enable them to be able to continue to function. So do not delay. It's much easier to begin early than to try and begin late.
And there are many resources out there that are particularly useful to people with low vision. We've spoken about many of them on previous episodes of Eyes on Success, but if you do some Googling around or network with some other people, you'll find lots more.
Presumably, if you're listening to us, you've already started finding at least some resources for people with vision loss, but I'm sure you can identify with his comments because most people who lose their vision as adults really have had no reason to know about all of the resources that are available and therefore probably didn't know when they started needing them. But he's absolutely right. You want to get hold of all of the tools and all of the help that you can get as soon as you can find it.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
the Guide Dog Foundation, training and placing guide dogs for over 70 years, providing independence, enhanced mobility, and companionship to people who are visually impaired or have other special needs at no personal cost. To learn more about their programs or to apply for a guide dog, visit www.guidedog.org. Let's start by meeting Joe Fontenot.
Yeah, I'm Dr. Joe Fontenot. I'm a former cardiologist and now work as a low vision specialist. And I live in Mobile, Alabama. I'm the medical director and founder of Community Services for Vision Rehabilitation, or CSVR. We're a nonprofit clinic, a 501c3 nonprofit. We work under a medical model. We fully evaluate every patient we see in a visual function way. We do not provide longitudinal care or surgery or anything like that. We work strictly in the vision rehabilitation field. Our main office is in Mobile, Alabama. We also see patients in Daphne, Alabama, in Montgomery, Alabama, and in Goshen, Mississippi. We see those patients in office space donated to us by other organizations. We do have a main office staffed on a daily basis in Mobile, Alabama.
We'll talk a little bit later on about how you started to lose your vision while you were practicing cardiology, but can you tell us what the state of your vision is currently?
It hasn't changed a lot. It's been relatively stable, and it's in the 2250 to 2350 range in my better eye, at 2450 in the other eye, but I just have large central blind spots. Identical to what people who have age-related macular degeneration ends up with the same problem with large central scotomas and impaired central vision, but my peripheral vision is pretty good.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic starts with Joe's progression from being fully sighted to having low vision and his resulting transition from being a cardiologist to being a low vision specialist. And most of this segment will talk about what it means to be a low vision rehabilitation specialist and what kinds of services they make available.
So maybe we can start by having you describe to us the progression of your vision loss.
I was 50 years of age and a busy practicing cardiologist and had no idea that I had any eye problems. And I began to notice some changes in my vision. And I went and saw an ophthalmologist who said that I had a problem, particularly in one eye. And he referred me to the Wilmer Eye Clinic at Johns Hopkins. And there I was diagnosed as having angioid streaking and retinal hemorrhages. At that time, in 1988, there was no treatment for this. There is now in the form of the anti-VEGF drugs, Lucentin and Avastin, the drugs that are commonly used to treat age-related macular degeneration and diabetic eye disease. But in 1988, there was no such treatment available. So my vision declined very rapidly over a four-month period of time. Within a few months, I could no longer drive, could not read normally.
Many people who are new to vision loss have trouble finding out about aids and services that are available. How did you handle that at first?
Partly because of my ability to search the medical literature, I was able to find out about the help available for people who had impaired vision. And I rapidly acquired these aids and devices. I visited several low vision clinics, including the Lighthouse in New York City, and was able to obtain help while my vision was declining.
So I understand that you continued working as a cardiologist for quite a while as your vision declined through this transition. How did you handle that, though?
I was very lucky in that I had a good arrangement in my cardiology group and was able to cut down on some of the things I did. I stopped doing heart catheterizations, balloon and stent procedures, but was able to concentrate on doing things that did not require really good vision up front. And I acquired closed circuit television enlargers, computer software, stronger glasses. I had a good cardiac nurse who helped me.
Did you stop doing surgery altogether, or you just stopped doing more delicate procedures?
I stopped doing that. I continued to do stress tests, to read EKGs. What I did was pretty diverse, and I was able to let the things that I had difficulty doing go and just focus on the ones that I could do without great difficulty.
How did this transition through vision loss affect your life outside of work?
Well, I was a very busy guy, probably busier than I should have been. And I had a wife and children, and I played tennis. I was a hunter, a fisherman, and I was an avid windsurfer. And my wife is a nurse practitioner now. So she had a pretty quick grasp of the situation. And I had to stop playing tennis, obviously, and hunting. I still could fish, but the main thing I concentrated on was windsurfing. And I did that for the next 20 years. I've windsurfed all over the world. And I was able to continue reading, using, of course, the talking books y'all are all familiar with. And also, I used Zoom text, computer enlargement and reading software. So I was able to get by without too much trouble.
We've also observed that these changes can be difficult on the support network and family of the person who might be losing their vision too. It's not just an impact on the person losing their vision.
Right, right. In our vision rehabilitation practice, we always insist that a family member, preferably the main caregiver, do the whole examination, discussion, and all of that along with the patient. Because again, it does affect the support system, the family, the friends, the spouse, whoever, at least as much as the patient. Mm-hmm. And they do require extra care. Somebody has to drive them. Somebody will have to at least initially look at menus, look at incoming mail and various things like that. Now, a person who has vision loss can do all those things, but they do it a lot slower and often so slowly that somebody else has to, particularly if it's in a hurry, there's a situation where things are developing rapidly, somebody else has to take over. But again, I was very lucky in that I had good friends, a very good wife, and a good family, and, you know, was able to get people to help me. Also, I could hire somebody.
Yeah, I guess as you say, when you're newly blind, some of those things can take a little bit longer, but eventually you do get better at it and things can happen more quickly. But there definitely is a transition.
What about other relationships besides your family and primary support system?
When you lose part of your vision, you do lose a lot. I mean, you lose the ability to do a lot of things you could do, particularly some of the things you might want to do as hobbies and whatnot. And you will lose some friends. There are people who will not want to, let's just say, associate with you because of your vision loss. And for instance, there are people that you've done things with in a recreational way, and you can't do that anymore. So you lose contact with those people. You know, that's not necessarily intentional on their part, but it's just that you're no longer there participating, doing the same things you did before. But again, I was considered myself to be very, very lucky in all those regards.
And it sounds like both in your professional and your personal life, you were pragmatist about what you were able to do, and you were able to make some changes in your lifestyle, your interests, and your tasks that made it possible to still continue on in many of the things that you did take pleasure from.
Right. I think the thing that I encourage people to do is to focus on the things they can do. And if there are things they cannot do, just don't worry about it. Do something else.
Or just find another way of doing the same thing. Over the years, we've interviewed many, many blind people who've managed to continue doing many things, some of which you might not expect them to be able to do once they lost their vision, and that ranges from skiing to knitting to programming computers, doing woodworking, on and on and on.
So you successfully then carried on in cardiology for another 15 years, as you stated, but then eventually you decided to change careers a little bit and your thrust and open this low vision clinic. Can you tell us how you decided to make that change and what prompted it?
Well, when I first developed vision loss, I, as I told you, searched very quickly for ways to continue to function. I went through the medical literature, I obtained as much information as I could. I also joined multiple organizations. I joined the American Council of the Blind, joined the American Federation of the Blind, I joined the Council of Citizens with Low Vision, and went to one of the national meetings and continued on in my ongoing search for ways to continue to function. And doing all of this, I obtained enough knowledge to be able to counsel some people. And some of my fellow physicians would occasionally refer a patient to me. They would tell the patient who they had seen for some other problem and who also had vision loss. They would say, well, you ought to go down the hall there and see Joe. He doesn't see well, and he's got a bunch of aids and devices, magnifiers and whatnot. Maybe he could help you. So they would call my office, and I'd say, sure, send him on over. And I would see him and show him what I did and what I used and suggest ways they could, you know, do better. So over the years, I realized that the majority of people who developed vision loss had no idea what was available. And ordinarily, the ophthalmologist did not tell them. So there was both a lack of referral from the ophthalmologist and a lack of knowledge on the part of the patient as to what would be helpful to them.
So it sounds like at the time you were just giving informal advice to people who learned that you had low vision and had figured out how to work some of the devices and obtain some of the services. How did you turn that into a full-fledged vision rehabilitation center?
I saw there was a need for it. And I began to look into this more and more, and I decided that this would be a good thing for me to do. I thought, well, I'm getting up into my 60s. I need to slow down a little bit anyway. So I went to a couple of courses at the Lighthouse International in New York, did a little studying at home, went to some of the meetings of the low vision organizations. And then I took a national exam in 2002 in Boston and became a certified low vision therapist. And I joined the American Academy of Ophthalmology as an associate member. And I actually am now chair of the Vision Rehabilitation Committee of the American Academy of Ophthalmology and have been for the last 3 years.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I really have kind of worked my way into this and I've enjoyed it greatly. It's been a lot of fun. We've seen a lot of people who I think we've helped and seen over 3,000 people.
And what kind of services does your organization offer?
We're pretty busy and we do a lot of educational outreach. We do that with two focuses. One is focusing on trying to get ophthalmologists and optometrists to let patients who develop vision loss know that there is help available. And there's all sorts of ways that we do that. We do have meetings. We invite the ophthalmologists and optometrists. We go to their offices. We have separate meetings for the office staff. There's all kind of ways we do it. And then we have sort of thing directed at the patients. So we direct some information in various ways to the lay public and try and let the lay public know that there is help available and that the vision rehabilitation process will enable a lot of them to continue to function a lot better, to be able to do at least some of the things they would like to be able to continue doing.
Well, that's really important. I think you've hit on a major, major issue that people who begin losing their vision and previously had no reason to expect that they would really don't know what services are available. You know, so if you can inform the general public about what services are available, or at least get them directed to where they can start, that's a fantastic service.
Right. And, you know, there have been all kinds of studies done on this. Most people who lose their vision suddenly, the majority, 90% of them, lose their job. And then even those who develop it more slowly, but not rapidly, not in one fell swoop, so to speak, most of them go through a phase of denial. Mm-hmm. And so they'll go through a phase of denial and not do anything about it. And then they gradually become dependent on people. If you cannot read for more than a few days, you're going to be dependent upon somebody else to read for you. And once that dependency starts, it doesn't stop. And a lot of people then, because of the dependency, they become depressed. And you know the rest of the story. So it's important that people know what to do rapidly, quickly, as soon as they start developing vision loss. And that's what we emphasize. If you can see people and let them know what to do, what will help them early in the game, it's much easier for them to begin using aids and devices. It's much easier for them to learn what to do. If you let them go for 6 months or 6 years without reading, it's very difficult to get them to return to any level of function. So it's something that is much better worked at when people in the first initial phases of vision loss.
You know, I often comment to people that I almost feel fortunate that I've had vision problems since I was born, because to me it's kind of natural, and I've been plugged into all these services and resources and technologies that can be helpful to me. Whereas if you are introduced to vision loss later in life, it's a lot more difficult of a transition.
Yeah, that's true.
If somebody new comes to your clinic, what should they expect?
Now, the first thing we do when we see the patients, we do a functional visual evaluation. Now, we take a history, we talk to the patient, we find the chronology of their vision loss, like when did you start having trouble seeing? When did the doctor start doing the shots in your eyes? When did you stop driving? When can you no longer read the newspaper? And that, so we get an idea about what's happened to that particular person. And in the process of evaluating that, we find out a lot about the patient. about their literacy, their competence as far as doing certain things, and what their goals are, what they want to do or what they feel they need to be able to do. And then a functional visual evaluation. Now, we do not just use an e-chart. Everybody in the world knows there's an e up top. And if you put a totally blind person standing up and say, what's that up against the wall? They'll say it's an e. But so we have a different type of chart, an ETDRS chart that's got more letters up top and allows us to separate people into varying degrees of vision loss. We then do a visual field test where we see whether they have central vision loss, peripheral vision loss with visual constriction, or scattered defects in the visual field. We do a contrast sensitivity test to see what their level of contrast sensitivity is. That is the ability to tell shades of colors and textures. We check a reading test. It's called the M&Read test. We have them read from a chart which has sentences of equal length and complexity but decreasing size. So we learn a lot about people and what their capabilities and motivation and what their needs are. So then we can, through all of that, come up with a pretty good idea about what they need to be able to accomplish their goal.
That sounds like a very thorough evaluation. Once you've done that, what happens next?
And we have, of course, a knowledge of what's available as far as strong glasses, magnifiers, lighting, electronic devices, computer devices. And then once we come up with a program for what they need, we let them try it out. We demonstrate it to them, and then they can use it at home. And we have occupational therapists who can make home visits. We do refer to state agencies, too. We work as closely as we can with them. We have support groups that meet. We have computer training classes that are free. You know, we think we provide a relatively comprehensive level of service. We feel that we can help almost anybody with any degree of vision loss.
I think what's interesting about these low vision clinics and what many people may not appreciate is that they really seem to work on getting people to function in their daily lives the way they would like to more effectively. And it's really all about what do you want to do? What are your goals? And how can we make you reach those goals?
Everybody's different. And so let's just say the needs of a high school student who's going to be going on to college are totally different from somebody who has been retired for 10 years and really just wants to read the incoming mail and watch TV.
Yeah, and these services are really not provided by your standard ophthalmologist. It really is, you know, a very different function that the low vision clinic is providing.
The number of ophthalmologists who are really interested in low vision is small. And what we're hoping is to get them interested enough to just simply refer the patient.
So one of the messages here might be that if you experience vision loss at an older age, it's certainly the right thing to do to go see an ophthalmologist, get it all diagnosed, and to do as much as you can. But that certainly isn't the end of the road. There are many other resources available that can help you in your daily life with your vision issues.
Yes, that's true. There is no substitute for the ophthalmologist's care. And so we insist that anybody who's seeing us as a patient also be seeing an eye doctor on a regular basis. We will not actually continue to see a person if they refuse to go see an ophthalmologist.
And that makes a lot of sense because the ophthalmologist can actually have an impact on the progression of your vision loss, but the low vision clinics are there to help you integrate new techniques into your daily life so that you can go about whatever it is you want to continue to be able to do. Now for this week's final item, how to contact Dr. Joe Fontenot, how to reach his low vision clinic or find another one in your area, and how to find some other resources that he's found most helpful.
Where can people go to get more information about your organization or low vision clinics in general?
Okay, they can go to our website, which you have, I think, www.csvrlowvision.org.
And for people who aren't so conversant with the web, is there a phone number?
251-476-4744.
Is there an email address people can direct questions to?
visionrehab@bellsouth.net.
And do you have a social media presence?
We do, Facebook.
And what would people look for on Facebook?
And look up for Community Services for Vision Rehabilitation, or look up Low Vision Services in Alabama or Mobile, Alabama. They can do a Google search too, which pulls us up very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if there's a national organization, kind of an umbrella organization, if somebody happens not to be in Mobile, Alabama, if they're looking for a local low vision clinic where they could easily find one?
Yeah. First, there's a free app called Vision Connect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's from the American Foundation for the Blind. So the AFB, that's afb.org. And they go to that, and then they can put in the search box on that website anything they want, but they can put up help near you, that sort of thing. But the AFB has got a very good list of services throughout the United States. And again, that's Pris Rogers. Y'all can talk to Pris about that too. Pris is in charge of that particular app and that particular website.
Yes, we've talked to Pris about the VisionAware site that she runs. And that was in episode 1410, if anybody's looking for it.
Yeah, right. It's VisionAware. That's part of the AFB.org.
And that's a very good resource for people who are dealing with low vision.
Right, right. They have a list of almost all the low vision services throughout the United States.
And as usual, all of that contact information and links to resources can be found in our show notes for this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net. Make use of those show notes.
That's it for show number 1630. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about an exciting research project at Toyota. Toyota's mission is to provide people with mobility solutions that are not limited to cars and trucks. We'll speak with Doug Moore, the head developer on a project within Toyota's partner robot group, about a device under development that uses artificial intelligence to help the visually impaired navigate large indoor spaces. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.